Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Motherhood has become such a strong theme in my work in the last 2 years. And I think the reason is with this like strengthening spiritual practice, you realize that the act of being a mother is such a spiritual act. It's firstly totally miraculous that we can grow life within us. I mean, it's so common to carry a child, but it's just so crazy. Like, it's like a miracle. It's an alien as well growing inside you. But I also think that just you, like you said before, that how much you have to carry, how much space you have to hold, how many burdens you have to carry. You're carrying the fear and love of your children, but you're also aware of like, there's this like future fear, like, oh, I'm bringing children to this world. This world is not a world that has space for all of these children in terms of emotional space. It's just, there's so many, the figures are like these vessels that contain all of those fears and love and joy and like everything that a mother carries.
It's my pleasure to welcome Tani Lonsdale to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Tani is an artist rendering emotional divinity through the use of layered oil paints and ethereal intuitive compositions. Born in 1982 and raised in Sussex, UK, Tani attended the University of the Arts in London, where she primarily studied painting, graduating with a BFA in 2007. After moving to LA in 2015, her practice evolved to embrace large-scale painting, soft sculpture, and works on paper. Some recent exhibitions include Not Ghosts, But Just As Loud, her first solo show with Massimo Di Carlo in Paris, France, a solo booth at the Armory with Cobb Gallery in New York, New York, and Our Humans at Fabian Lang in Zurich, Switzerland, Observation Periton in Dubai at the United Arab Emirates, and True Romance at Night Gallery in Los Angeles, California, among others. She recently completed her first residency at Ceramica Suro in Guadalajara with exhibition A. Tani lives and works in Los Angeles, California with her family. Welcome to the podcast, Tani.
Thank you. Thanks for that introduction.
I can't wait to ask you how you juggle all of these international shows. But first, let me, you know, just start where I always do with asking about your childhood. I'm always interested if you were exposed to art as a kid, how you kind of, you know, realized that being an artist could be something for your future, and, you know, what threads you sort of see connecting you from who you are today as, you know, this amazing artist to the way that you were raised.
Yeah. So I grew up in the English countryside. I'm number three of four sisters. I know lots of women energy. It's not like I had like exposure to art. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, my parents weren't artistic. My dad is very mathematical. My mom, although creative in her own ways, she didn't work. She looked after us kids. She was a stay-at-home mom. I would say the biggest influence was just being in nature and having a wild imagination. I remember having a few different imaginary friends, and I would like have tea parties for us. There was like a big attic in our house that I used to spend a lot of time in building dens. And there were all these like secret passages and back, like hidden doorways in the house too. And I remember like hiding in them. So I just remember it being like a childhood full of like exploring and adventure and like being just like in the woods.
Little Narnia there.
Yeah, exactly. My mom's wardrobe was the Lion, the Witch, and the wardrobe. And I used to get in there and like look for like a land hidden in the back.
Oh, so good.
But it was just that, really. We didn't really go to like museums or galleries mm-hmm. or anything, but we were allowed to roam free. Mm. And I think that's probably the biggest influence growing up, is like tapping into my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. I wasn't raised around art, but I was raised on 180 acres in a log cabin. So,
yeah.
You know, just that experience of, I don't know, like the freedom and the autonomy mm-hmm. that you kind of described is something that I definitely feel like connects to my artist identity and my creativity. But you did end up going to art school. Was it kind of in like your high school years that you started leaning into art, or was that something you really had to find in, you know, the university setting?
So I think up until about the age of 12, I really wanted to be a writer. Like I'd write short stories. Just crazy stories all the time. And I loved doing that. And I was really fond of my English teacher, and he was really encouraging. But when I went to, I don't know what it's called in the UK school system, it's sort of somewhere between middle school and high school, you go when you're like 13. Mm-hmm. When I went to that sort of section of school, the creative writing was kind of like, I don't know, taken away from me. It was more about like dissecting Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly felt like I didn't really understand. It was mm-hmm. too much. It was like, it was beyond me suddenly. And I was like, didn't feel that comfortable in the English. I didn't feel that comfortable like writing anymore. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really encouraged. So that's how I sort of like found my way to the art department. It was like finding like a safe space at school. I mean, I think essentially that's what happens when you get to that age. You sort of start to try and find your place mm-hmm. where you feel comfortable. And there was a really great art department at my school. It was kind of like crumbling and falling down. It wasn't like modernized, but there was a great art teacher. And he would like provide me with canvases and paint. And it was very encouraging. I don't think I was particularly good at art then. I was enthusiastic. I remember like really not being that happy with what I was making, but I just remember it just being really a safe space and a place where I felt like, well, there wasn't really a grading system. They didn't really mark your paintings. Which I think is the right thing, because how can you grade art? But it just felt like a very unjudgmental space. And I think up until about the age of 18, I like did start to flourish there and started making more interesting work. It was still very high school-y. I mean, it wasn't winning any awards for sure. But it definitely felt like, oh, this is where I want to be. I don't know where it's going, but I can't imagine doing anything else kind of feeling.
Did you know any professional artists or artists who were kind of making a living, you know, being an artist?
No. I mean, I don't think the only like major role model I had was my next oldest sister. Mm. So she was about 4 years older than me, and she was what I imagined to be like a real artist, because she could like paint anything exactly the way it looked. She was really talented, and she went to art school.
Okay.
She ended up being a fashion designer and eventually starting her own label. But she was, in a way, it made me like pull away from art a bit, because she was so good, and compared to her, I didn't have the same skill set. And something different, but at the time it felt like she was the actual artist. Mm. So it was like you know, one way she was a role model and the other way it kind of made me feel like I was less capable. But I suppose that her going to art school kind of trod the path for me to be able to do that too. I saw how it worked.
Mm. Well, in siblings, we always compare ourselves to our siblings, right? Like, what better mirror and yet, you know, I don't know, the opposite of everything you want to be.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because they are, it's actually the same when I came to have kids as well. Like, it was the same sister.
Yeah.
But they are our inspiration, but also like, they also, we have to share our light with them. So that can be like two opposing forces, really.
Yes, absolutely. That's really interesting that you, I feel like you described these two moments, both in the kind of creative writing world initially, where you like found a little bit of footing, but then they kind of like it wasn't quite the right fit. You know, you had this idea for like being a creative writer, and then they put like this structure around you. And then, you know, having that experience of your sister being able to be like a real, you know, perfectly realism, you know, rendering things. And again, like you kind of have to say, now, wait, like, what is my role in this? Like, what do I kind of want out of this? And yeah, I just like to think of you as a young artist, like kind of staking that claim, like saying, no, this one is the one I'm going to stay in. Like, I'm going to figure this out for myself, even if it doesn't look exactly like my sister's work, you know? So tell me like what your work looks like now for listeners who maybe have not seen it. And what are some of, you know, just broad strokes, what are some of the kind of basic themes that you're thinking about, concepts that you're exploring within your work?
Okay, so firstly, my work is not observational. I make paintings from, let's say, my imagination. Often they're from sketches that come from my imagination. So there is, I give myself some grounding, something tangible to work from. They're often big, but I do like to work very small as well. I have a few little ones in my home studio here. And I use oil paint. Color is very important. I would almost say that the application and the layering of colors is sometimes more important. There's times when the abstraction and the color application is winning over the composition and the narrative, but they're almost like in a tug of war with each other, like each one's pulling and the other one pulling, trying to claim their space. I generally work, my paintings have developed a lot and they do generally keep developing and changing. So, but the process is quite similar in that I tend to put a layer of color in acrylic on the canvas. So like, let's say a bright orange. And then I work into that. So that's where color plays an important role. It's like, how do these colors interact with each other when layered on top of each other? And like, how do they change? And then when I've sort of done a few layers of color, I will like draw onto the canvas with paint. So it's like drawing, but I'm using a paintbrush and paint just to get like a basic composition down. And then I will work into that and rubbing out lines or bits of paint, adding more, like editing it until there's like more of a solid composition. And then it's just like a process of layering, removing, adding. And what comes from this is these figures. They're not human, but they're like, they have like an essence of humanism. They have like emotion. They have a soul. And sometimes I've described them as celestial beings. Sometimes they feel more earthly. They could be seen as quite alien-like or quite ghostly. It's sort of, I like to think of them as, sometimes I refer to them as guardians ancestors. They're kind of like the invisible presence that you can sense around you. And if you're intuitively tapped into yourself.
Imaginary friends.
There you go. When you're a kid, they're your imaginary friends. When you're an adult, they're your guides or your your guides. And I think if you've spiritually tapped into that, then people listening will understand. If you don't have a spiritual practice so much, or maybe you're religious, we all call them different things. Mm-hmm. But I think kind of it could even be your intuition, that voice that's sort of guiding you. So they've taken form in my paintings. And they keep coming up, and they're slightly different as the paintings go on, but they always have the same feeling. And sometimes they're standing on solid ground, and sometimes they're kind of floating. Mm-hmm. But they move between more abstract and more figurative, depending on. Right now, I'm doing less outlines. I'm kind mm-hmm. of letting them build themselves from scratch, just emerge without me trying to define them.
I was looking through your website, and you have your work organized by year, and you can really, you kind of started describing your work by saying that, I don't think you said you work in series, but that your work evolves in phases, and mm-hmm. you can really see the like, oh, this is like what she was doing in this body of work. And then, these like tweaks and shifts that happen like gradually. And of course, it's all like from you. It's all like mm-hmm. your cohesive body of work. But I just thought the like delineations were like so interesting to like kind of see it laid out in this timeline of, seeing the work progress and change and evolve. And it made me wonder, like, what was she thinking? Like, what was the problem that she was trying to solve like this year, and then like next year, it's like, oh, she left like that bolder line behind, and now she's playing with it. It was like really cool to kind of like, just try to get in your head a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that it is interesting that you noted that they're they're separated into years rather mm-hmm. than, because I don't work in series so much, mm-hmm. but it is interesting to separate the work in some way. And yeah, if I look back to when work I was making around the time I had my kids, mm-hmm. it's like obsessed with domesticity because mm-hmm. I was at home in a domestic setting, and like, I think for anyone, any mother or anyone who is, let's just say mother, because you're at home with your kids, but anyone who has the role of being at home looking after kids, you do feel claustrophobic and trapped. I mean, it's very rare if you don't, but I think that for me, like, to not be able to work the way I wanted to work was really frustrating. And so I felt really like repressed mm-hmm. or suppressed or some kind of pressed.
Yeah.
pressed in by my surroundings. And so therefore, like, the work is all about these like being squished between sofas and chairs and plates and tables. And then, every little life choice in my life, through my life is like resulted in a different kind of work. I mean, when mm-hmm. I moved to LA, it created these like alien landscapes. And then when I was going through my divorce, or actually before I got divorced, which was a harder time, mm-hmm. The work became like these figures twisted around each other. There was like mm-hmm. a lot of anguish. And then when we separated and I like started dating and going out into the world as a single woman, like the work became very free and loose and highly sexualized. There was like bodies like twisting, not in anguish, but like, like rejoicing.
Pleasure, yeah.
That was fun. And then I met my boyfriend, and he he worked in the flower industry, and he would bring me flowers every day from the market. And so flowers started coming into the paintings.
I love that.
And then the pandemic shifted things a lot, because it did for everyone, but like the figures became less human, and they became, with more concern with spirituality, the figures became more otherworldly. And it's just, yeah, it's like a timeline.
Mm-hmm. I love that. As you're listening, listeners, pull up Tani's either Instagram or website and kind of click through, because it's just really cool to see these. I love the way you just laid that out. One thing that I first loved about your work, because I've been like following you for years, and just, you know, you're a painter that I've kind of had like a girl crush on. but I never knew if you were a mother or not. And so you weren't somebody that I was like, you know, I'll reach out to her. You know, I kind of had to do like some sleuthing to like figure that out. And all that to say, like, one of the first things that I loved about your work was actually kind of what you described in the figures being human, but like they always seemed larger than life. Like there was like this scale to them that I was like, that looks like a body, but it looks like a body that's like on steroids, or that is kind of jacked up because of a specific like role that they have. Like it made me, they were like very maternal to me. And I even have like a series of work where when I had my second kid, just started painting these kind of like maternal abstract forms that looked a little like footballish, like quarterback, like they kind of had these like large shoulders and like the, you know, this like breadth to like the figure. And I don't know, I always like kind of wondered like if that, because for me, just feeling like you suddenly have to be and exist larger than you actually are, right? And like the, because you're now responsible for like another human being, and just feeling like the weight of that, it really, you know, it's like a very visceral experience to both feel physically like you have to be more than you are, like your body has to keep giving and giving, right? But then also like metaphorically, like I'm not like a good enough person to like know how to raise a kid and do all this stuff, you know? So I don't know. That's just like a view, like a fangirl viewer, like kind of probably reading into what I wanted to read into the work. But I always wondered if there was a specific like reference to the maternal presence in within your work. And I think there definitely clearly is now, like the paintings that you've been making recently, there's very clearly like a relationship to the figures where it looks like there's a child form or several childlike forms, and then kind of parent or larger figure forms.
Yeah, you know, it's strange because my kids are 14 and 11. Okay. So I've had them for a while.
Yeah.
And it's only really in the last couple years that motherhood has become such a strong theme in my work. Mm. And I like, to me, that's strange because actually my sister sent me a message the other day on Instagram saying, "Are you pregnant?" !! question mark. And I was like, no. And she's like referring to my paintings. Like,
yeah.
And I've been asked that before. And I'm like, motherhood has become such a strong theme in my work in the last 2 years. And like, I think the reason is with this like strengthening spiritual practice, mm-hmm. you realize that the act of being a mother is such a spiritual act. Mm-hmm. It's firstly totally miraculous that we can grow life within us. It's so common mm-hmm. to carry a child, but it's just so crazy. Like it's like a miracle. Weird.
Alien. Yeah.
an alien as well growing inside you. But I also think that just you, like you said before, that how much you have to carry, mm-hmm. how much space you have to hold, how many burdens you have to carry. You're carrying the fear and love of your children, but you're also aware of, like, there's this like future fear, like, oh, I'm bringing children to this world. This world is not a world that can, that has space for mm-hmm. all of these children in terms of emotional space. It's just, there's so many, the figures are like these vessels that contain all of those fears and love and joy and like everything that a mother carries. So I think that it's like they're like metaphors for,
yes.
For what's going on. They're yes. like carrying the mothers of the world. They're carrying the burdens and the fears and the love of this planet or the humans on it.
Mm.
So I think motherhood is kind of a metaphor for that. I'm just looking at my painting now and I'm seeing just like all these figures with these like rounded bellies.
It is interesting, like your sister's comment of how, you know, your framing of how, like, now that your kids are a little bit older, maybe you're able to like see motherhood in a way. Like, I just wonder if for me, I was more engaged in thinking about the maternal perspective when my kids were like really young, because it was just so overwhelming and it felt like I couldn't get my brain space anywhere else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think too, like, there was maybe, and I'm just speaking like for myself, like as an artist in the studio, there was maybe some critical thinking like lost within that time, because it's just so vulnerable and emotional and you're just like overwhelmed, you know? And like, I wonder if actually having some distance from, you know, like a bit more boundaries of like not making work completely about like my maternal experience, like would have served me better. So I just, and you know, there's no right or wrong, of course, I'm just speaking for myself, but I actually really like the perspective of processing it when you're a little bit out of like the crazy years and like you can kind of come back and say like, wait, who am I now? Like, I'm a mother, and what does that mean? And like you actually have like, you know, space to process it in a way.
Yeah, I think also my 14, he turns 14 next week, but he is not my baby anymore. He's his own person, and I sense that. And my 11-year-old is still very much my baby, but I see in the coming years, the like next 2 years. So I guess it's that like awareness that my role as a mother is shifting. Mm-hmm. It's becoming less physical. It's becoming less the daily grind of being a mother, which when they're young is really the daily grind. It's like exhausting. Now it's like, it's more of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's more nuanced. It's more, it's just different. It changes. And I also think that, yeah, like you said, there's definitely more reflection, more of a feeling of reflection now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but I also think that I'm my art inspiration, as in the artists I've been looking at recently, have been sculptors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's this feeling of the vessel is coming through in the paintings, more like these containers. They're like like vessels is the best word I can use to describe them.
Yeah, the figures like are in a way less fluid in terms of the way that they're read as a painting than they used to be, or like than like previous iterations of the work. They more, like you said, they stand alone as these like vessels, or you know, these forms that are a bit more defined rather than kind of you know, like before your work, there was a lot more like layering within the composition, I feel like. And there's like a bit more clarity, I think, like looking at the work now, which is, just amazing to see. One thing I've been thinking about recently, and just looking at your work, like thinking about it in this conversation, is just the idea of like autonomy. And I recently went on, I guess, my first like longish, I mean, I was gone for a week trip away from my kids, and all three of my kids stayed here. I actually went to London. And you know, I've had like friends like say, tell me about your trip. Was it amazing? Like you saw so much good art. And, you know, you come, like you have these like visions of what this like time alone is going to be like. And, you know, you're going to do all the things. And like, I did all the things, but it's like the word that kept coming up was, I just felt so tethered. Like there's no autonomous experience that I can have anymore because I'm like half a world apart away from my kids. And it's not even like I felt guilty. Like I felt great being there, but just the idea of like, I can't even be in a foreign country, like completely like in a different time zone without feeling, you know, like the like weight of our family like holding me, you know, and also the weight of myself like holding my family. Like there's no just like me in this moment anymore. And
yeah,
I don't know, it's like something I've been thinking about a lot.
Well, I mean, I just want to go back to the word guilt, because I just am riddled with mother guilt constantly. And so I'm not with my kid's dad anymore. We like separated in 2018, and we're now on like a week on, week off schedule. So every other week, the kids are with their dad. And I don't feel guilty about that. I take those weeks and I use them and I work hard and I paint hard. And then when I have the kids, I generally, you know, find ways to work between school hours and stuff. But I'm like with the kids a lot. But my guilt comes in because I tend to go on my trips when I'm not with them, like whether it's with my boyfriend or whether it's to if I have a show in London or Zurich or wherever I have one, I'll just go without them. And I will see probably on Instagram, like images of artists with their husbands and kids, and they're all going to see mom's art or dad's art. And I'm like, I've never done that. I've always kept my kids so separate from my art practice. It's almost like they've been two separate lives. I've lived two lives. I have my life with my kids, and then I've had my life as an artist where I paint or I go on these trips, and I've even going around art galleries, I've never taken them. And whether that's the wrong or the right thing to do, I don't know, but it's a decision that started because I had kids when I was like 26, and I guess I didn't know how else to do it. And so therefore it set the sort of stage for how I went on. And I get to a point now in my life where they're that 14 and 11, and they've never really come to any of my shows. And I feel so guilty about that, but I just can't say whether it would have been different if I'd done it differently, how that would have gone. But like if I was to have another baby, like, would I do it differently? Would the baby come to the studio with me? Right. Would I be able to paint with it there? But I've always found it so hard to work and like with that distraction. So I have a lot of parent guilt, mum guilt from that. And I think that like I went to London for Frieze last year because I had some work in I had some work there with Night Gallery, and I didn't take the kids, even though that my family are all there and it would have been a great opportunity. I was like, no, I just want to go and I just want to like do my thing. But God, the mum guilt is so big.
And the truth is, if you carted them everywhere, you would have or could have just as much guilt. Like, I shouldn't be dragging them to all this stuff. Why did I do this? Now I'm here and they're here and it's really stressful. Like, there's no, you know, perfect solution. Thank you so much for sharing that. I feel like it's like always good to be reminded that we all have those insecurities about like comparing ourselves to other artists, and especially, you know, comparing ourselves to even artist mothers who we see doing it in certain ways, right? And it's all kind of like this show that we put on for Instagram or for whatever. And not that it's not authentic, but you know, there's like a veil, right?
That
is like there. And we're like, well, how do they make that look so easy? And you know, of course, you know, behind the scenes, like there's a backpack, there's a grandma or there's a stressed out dad who has a backpack full of snacks and is like, can we get out of here, please? Where's the nearest cafe? Like, we need hot chocolate ASAP, you know? I don't know. I feel like I've done a mixture of those things where, well, first of all, like, you know, this is a different conversation, but so many environments are not like conducive or family friendly. So I can't imagine that part of you feeling that way, you know, 14 years ago was also the environments where you would have been bringing your baby were not very welcoming to like you and your baby, probably, you know? But then, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just really hard. It's going to be hard no matter what. If you leave them at home, it's hard. If you bring them, it's hard, right?
Like, yeah. There's no correct way to do things. And
no.
Definitely most of my friends actually in LA are moms. They're mom friends. They're not like friends through art. Mm-hmm. Like I'd say I'm very heavy on the like non-art friends, which is another whole issue. It's like, God, like I should be like more, like have more of an artist community, but you know, you're a mom, you go with the things that make your life easy, basically. And so like I look at my friends who are moms and the level of involvement they have in their kids' lives and schools, and I'm just like, again, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just not doing a good job here. But you know, that is like, that's the voice in your head. And I'm also like wise enough to be able to like combat that with, well, you know, I'm giving my kids like this life where they can see their mom is an artist and she's doing what she loves and she's succeeding. She's supporting us with her art practice. So I'm wise enough to see both sides, but God, the voice in your head is so loud sometimes.
It is. I really relate to that. Especially as I think as somebody who quote unquote works from home, there's this like expectation that you are available to be way more involved in like all the kids stuff. And I am probably more involved than like, you know, my lawyer friend who has like a corporate job, but it just never feels like enough. Like right before this interview, I raced downtown to my youngest, his kindergarten teacher. They go to the local art museum. That's like one of their big field trips, right? And you know, I didn't sign up quick enough to be like the appropriate volunteer parent. So then, you know, I had to like use my membership to get in, and it was like a weird thing. My point is, like, part of the reason you like the artist lifestyle is the flexibility, the like humanness of it. You get to be present with your life and your family, but then it's like never enough. Like, you know, you're not the mom who like brought the right snack, you know, like, and you're just like, what the heck is wrong with me? Why can't I check the snack list on the right day? Like, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the lesson to learn is to like, just turn off the outside noise, because no one is doing it right. No one is doing it. No, everyone has got those insecurities. If they don't, then there's something wrong. But like every mother will have some form of insecurity. So,
or I think too, like your instinct to compartmentalize is really, you know, something to consider. I have, you know, a group of artist mother friends, and a few weeks ago we were talking about the never-ending like spirit weeks that the schools do. Like today you have to have a tie-dye outfit, and tomorrow it's a shamrock outfit, and you know, it's like, who has time to like figure out all these outfits and, you know, do all these things? And, you know, I made the comment, like, I wish the school would just make the stop with the things that are parent involved magic making that have to do with school. Just trust that when my kids are at home, I'm making magic with them in my own way. And you take full responsibility for the magic making while you're at school. It's the like things that they want to overlap that I'm like, stop, just like compartmentalize it more, please. You know, because
I have zero involvement in either of my kids' schools. I made the decision a long time ago that I'm not involved. I will turn up to the school performance once a term and the open house and the parent teacher conference. Those are three things I'll do.
Yeah.
Those are like, you have to do that. Mm-hmm. But I'll never make a costume. I just, and their dad as well is the same. We look at each other and we're like, no. I mean, I pretty much turn off all, unsubscribe from all school newsletters, and just, I'm making the decision to hand my kids over to the school in the day.
Right. There's trust involved.
That's their job. And I will collect my kids and I will take care of it from there.
Yes.
That's too much otherwise.
I know. Oh, Tani, tell me a bit about being an artist in LA and like what, I mean, how long have you been in LA?
I've been here about, this might be my 9th year.
So you were making paintings and starting your career back in the UK, and then you transitioned. Was that a specific career move related to your practice, or, you know, how is like kind of decision making and like building your career been for you like in that particular location?
Well, I mean, I moved when the kids were 5 and 2. It definitely wasn't a career move at all. In fact, like my career wasn't really anywhere at that time in England. It was very much kids, and I was painting constantly, but not in a career minded way. No, I was just kind of not enjoying being in London. I felt really isolated. And it felt very much like, if I don't do something now, this is going to be me in 30 years. I'm going to be like, I just did not want that. I was ready to like explore. So I actually had family in LA, and my ex-husband, the father of my kids, he worked in an industry, like in the advertising industry, and it was like really easy for him to get a transfer.
Okay.
So the move came about really easily. I just had to convince him to move.
Interesting. But
once I'd convinced him and he'd spoken to his work, it was quite quick. And I almost immediately loved it here. Like
really?
we moved to Venice. Yeah, because it's like so different.
Yeah.
It was.
Had
like
you spent much time in the States?
Well, when I was younger, we used to go to Florida a lot. But
okay.
I mean, I don't really think of that as, it was in the Keys. And
you cannot think of that as the States. That's fine. At least right now. No offense, Floridians, love y'all, but
you know. My boyfriend's from Florida, actually, so it's just kind of funny. But and I'd been to LA once before. I mean, I really didn't know what I was doing, but
yeah,
I needed to get out. I needed a fresh start. Life was pretty tough. There was some stuff going on family-wise, and when I got here, it wasn't artistically for my career. It wasn't great straight away because I didn't have a studio. I didn't have childcare. I didn't have any of my own money. I didn't have my own visa. I was dependent on my ex. So I kind of just like scrambled and like started making weird sketches from like all the packing boxes we had stuff. Just like, actually I made like weird relief sculptures out of all the boxes from packing. Oh, cool. And then I got a studio, shared studio with someone, which was tiny and expensive, and that I made quite weird art in there. Mm. And then eventually I found myself a great studio probably about a year in.
Okay.
And I don't know, in terms of like being able to say how it affected my art, I get asked that a lot, and it's like, I guess my state of mind was was in a different place, not better or worse, just different. So I think I just felt, freer to make the kind of work, not that I wanted to make, but just be more experimental. Like, no one was looking.
Right.
I didn't know anyone. I could just do whatever. And nothing really happened very quickly for me in my career wise. And I definitely found it really hard to meet an art community. Because it was still very much about my kids, my friends, the friends I made were all moms. None of them were artists. And it's taken me a long time to find a group of people who are artists who I'm close with. I've got like five really good artists or art related friends now. And it feels like a very natural group rather than like a sort of forced. There was a lot of me trying to force my way into like different artist communities out here, like in weird ways, like trying to find my crew. And eventually I like through much more natural ways found a crew, which is always, you know, inevitable.
You know? I think it does take more time than, you know, we live in like this instant gratification world and we have, you know, virtual community at our fingertips. Like I'm very much like a champion of virtual community, but I think building those like really like deep, authentic connections, they just like take more time than I think we all initially have patience for, you know, like we want our tribe like right away. And it's like, well, some people come and go and some, you know, I don't know. It takes some time.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I first got here, I was like, this is the kind of crowd I want. I want the like crowd that I didn't get living in London because I had kids. I want the like young, I want the sceney crowd. Like, who are the cool kids to hang out with? And like, it's obviously taken me like a while to realize that you don't really get to decide who your crew are. Like your crew decides itself.
Yeah.
Like once you start chilling the fuck out and like being more yourself and just being like, oh, this is my life. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and what I love. And like my crowd will find me.
Yeah.
So now I have like a really lovely crowd of women who some are artists, some have one good friend of mine has a gallery. I've got like just an art advisor friend. I've got two painter friends. I mean, it's just a very natural group. So it feels good. 9 years in, I feel like settled and, you know, LA feels like home now.
So 9 years into living in LA and, you know, really kind of growing your art career. I know you were painting and stuff in London, but I was wondering if you can look back on like some, I don't know, some like big things that you did that really, that you feel like contributed to momentum in your career. Like, was it that studio outside of the home? Was it like making bigger work? Like like cold calling somebody or, you know, like what are some like risks that you've taken that like, I don't know, you feel like contributed to the success that you've had so far?
So I remember when I first came to LA, one of the first galleries I went to visit by accident was Night Gallery. And I just remember like going in there and being like, oh, this is where I want to show. And being like, just making that decision. Like it seemed like a million miles away that I would ever, that, you know, it's like me thinking now I'd like to be in MoMA or something. It felt that like far away. And I just remember being like quietly focusing on that, being like, that's where I want to show. And I'm going to just focus on that. And really just not in a rush. Just like I'd go to every opening and I got chatting to Will Hathaway, who's now partner there, but at the time he was in sales. He was just really lovely. And you know, I just like made like a conscious effort to like just go and just like didn't spread my resources too thinly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously now I'm represented by them and, you know, I have a show with them in September. And I remember my first solo with them, which was 2022, and just like taking a moment and being like, okay.
You did it.
Like 7 years ago, this was like a faraway dream.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've achieved that dream.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was less of a risk and more of like just a like dedication to something I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done any cold calling. Like, it's like, I just feel too uncomfortable to do that. And I kind of feel that it wouldn't work in my favor. That kind of, it's not in my character. It wouldn't work in my favor. It would feel forced and contrived. So I've never done that. Not to say that's not right. I think also risks for me are like recently I started changing the way I'm making paintings. And what I said before about not like going in and drawing the outline of it, and just letting the painting emerge. And it's really uncomfortable. It seems very subtle, but it is really uncomfortable to change the way you're making art when you know the previous way has been successful and people like it and galleries like it. So I think risks, which are important, are to do what you want to do. And like, just remember that. It's like you're never done.
Mm-hmm.
It's never like, oh, this works, this is it. Like, you can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep exploring and like developing your work. So I think like just daily taking risks in your practice for sure is so important.
Did you know that, you know, as an artist, there's so many different ways that we can make a living and kind of piece together how we make it all work and function? Was representation kind of your main goal? Like, did you think about being a teaching artist or like other avenues, or was that kind of like where you set your sights? And, you know, I think part of the struggle sometimes is there's so many options as an artist. Like, I could do this, or I could do that, or I could, you know, sell prints, or I could like, and really it seems like you have this like commitment and focus.
Yeah. I think, I've never considered being a teacher. I had no like role models in my family. And honestly, like, I just don't think I'd be a very good teacher. I think I'd be terrible. the ideal in my head has always been, I just want to make art.
Yeah.
I need someone else to do, like, I want to be represented by a good gallery. I want to make the art and I want them to do their bit. So very like old fashioned almost in that, like, I really value that relationship with a gallery. Like, you can't coexist without each other in the way that if you want to like succeed and make a living from art, you can coexist without a gallery. You can exist without a gallery as an artist, obviously, but like, if you want to achieve, if you want to achieve success, and if success is to be able to like support yourself, make money, whether that's a lot of money or just enough money to pay the bills, like, it's an important relationship to have. And I think that it's also finding the right gallery as well.
So
for me, it's always been about the very classic model of making paintings and exhibiting them with a gallery that doesn't have to represent you necessarily. I think that's changing a lot now, but definitely the model of gallery artist for sure.
Okay, last question before we do our final five. This hour went so quick. we've talked kind of, I guess, to like bring it back to where we started, the idea of, we talked through just this trajectory of like you as this kid in the country and in the English countryside and like exploring your Narnia world and having your imaginary friends, and then through like art school and all these things. Just curious if like there's anything you would say to kind of some of those past versions of yourself, either like you as a child or maybe you as like, you know, the artist in London who like wanted the career and had the young kids, like, I don't know. What would you say? Like, if you're one of your guardians in your paintings that you paint, you know, like, what would you say?
Well, like the one word which is like keeps coming up throughout my whole life is patience. I mean, when I was a kid, as far back as I can remember, I used to have such bad anxiety. I'd worry, like I would just be like constantly worrying. My mom even had to buy me a little notebook so I could write my worries in it. And then she would write like how, you know, words of reassurance. But so I think that two things would be that, like, I was always so insecure about my sensitivity, like about like crying. Like I think I was teased in my, within my family for being sensitive and crying, not in a nasty way, but it obviously hit a nerve. So I think it, two things would be like, that is going to be your like superpower when you become an artist, is being able to tap into that extreme level of sensitivity, like feeling everything. And then the other one is like patience, because it just, you can't be in a rush and there is no need to be in a rush. Like, yes, I have all of these like exciting fantasies about where I would show my work and show the kind of shows I would have. And there's always such a rush, but like, there is no rush. Like, why do you want to achieve something now? What's beyond that? So it would be those two things. It's just like, take a breath and like, be patient, just keep doing it. And also just like, as an artist, like your sensitivity is so important.
I feel like we need a minute to soak in those words. Those were so good. Okay, final five. Who's your biggest art crush?
I was thinking about this. And if you mean crush by like, whose work would I like to own? There's an artist called Salman Tor who I absolutely love. He's doing so well now. I'll never be able to own one of his, but he makes beautiful work and I love it. Yeah.
Love it. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
I would like to go to Japan. And so would my oldest son. He really wants to go too. And so I think that one might happen. I'm kind of really holding out for a good show in Japan. I would love to have an exhibition in Japan. And I think, you know, maybe I can combine the two and actually take my kids with me.
Yeah, you will.
But I would love to do that. But I'm also going to Italy in May with my boyfriend to sort of travel around Tuscany. And that is also going to be magical. It's going to be a non-art trip. I promised him like we'll do a holiday that's not about me and exhibitions and shows. So yeah,
that's going to be great. Tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
Oh, I don't think I prepared for this one.
Or just so like it could be something you recently are consuming or whatever, anything that comes to mind.
Yeah, no, there was this book that I read like a couple of years ago. I think it was during the pandemic. Someone recommended it to me. It's called Many Lives, Many Masters. Mm-hmm. It's a really trippy book. It's like it's nonfiction and it's about past lives and, you know, like basically what happens, what is beyond this reality. And if we believe in like something greater than us. So this book is really about a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And he, by accident, starts like his patients, he starts doing past life regressions, whatever that word is. And it's just so trippy. And also like really plays into my curiosity about this. And with my work as well, like this idea of like guides and ancestors and spirit guides. But yeah, I think that really did too, because it kind of gave a sort of a voice to some of the things I've been thinking. I honestly think it's like a little bit too trippy for me, but like in essence, it kind of is very interesting.
Brian Weiss.
Is that what it's?
I looked it up. I'll link it in the episode, but sounds
and,
good.
A movie I've been referencing, The Abyss, a lot recently, just because there's a lot of like parallels between some of the things I've been painting in that movie, and I just I love sci-fi. I think it's the especially the like 90s sci-fi, which is just I don't know, there's less computer like graphics and AI, and it's just more like looks like someone's done it in their living room.
Yes.
So yeah, I think those two things are both quite trippy.
Yes, trippy, the word. Okay, favorite meal.
Favorite meal right now, because it changes a lot, is sort of ramen-esque food. Just cozy and flavorful. Yeah,
so good. Okay, and finally, who do you want to give a shout out to who supports your work?
I want to give a shout out to my lovely manager, Sarah Sickles, who we've been working together since maybe like nearly 2 years now. And she is, I'm just like, how did I ever manage without her? She's great. Sarah Sickles, shout out.
Yay, Sarah. All right, Tani. Well, where can folks find you and connect with you? What's your Instagram, website, any other platforms you're on?
Instagram is Tani Lonsdale. Website is tanilonsdale.com. It's all just Tani Lonsdale. It's pretty straightforward.
Perfect. Well, this was a great conversation. I loved your vulnerability and just the way that you talked about the idea of patience and autonomy and really like being intentional with your career. So much inspiration from this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thanks. Yeah, it was really a pleasure talking to you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.